Why are Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael struggling to form a government? Is it tribal, ideological, or have the wounds of the civil war yet to heal? Text us on 51551. And that's where we begin this evening.
Fianna Fáil Party, they are not creditworthy in terms of being in government.
So you're not going to do business with Micheál Martin?
Certainly not.
Under any circumstances?
Certainly not.
For me as a Fine Gaeler, a dyed-in-the-wool blue shirt, I mean, it's very difficult for me.
We've said that Fine Gael is not going to go into government with Fianna Fáil.
I will be opposing it, and I believe that that would be the view of the majority of my colleagues.
You know, Fianna Fáil fought the campaign on the doors when it came up. I reassured people we're not going into government with Fine Gael.
They don't want to be in government with us, right? They made that clear.
We do need mutual respect, and I think the vast majority of Fianna Fáil organisation don't believe that Enda Kenny has shown that respect.
The last election wasn't fought in historical differences. The last election was fought in a fundamentally different vision of Ireland should be governed.
Right, 51551 for your text. The selection there of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael voices, the parties representing the descendants of the anti-treaty and pro-treaty forces in the Irish Civil War. This bitter episode in our history has been described as a war of brother against brother due to the number of comrades and family members who were killed by their own. Its legacy tainted the generations that followed and poisoned relations between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, or what are now Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. But can the animosity between our two largest political parties be explained away as simply as this? I'm joined by Niamh Purcell, a historian and author, and by Niamh Horrigan, head of the Department of Sociology at University College Cork, who's in our Limerick studio, and also by Pat Leahy, deputy political editor of the Irish Times. Pat, is it as simple as that? Is what divides these two parties the civil war?
No, that's not all that divides them, but certainly it's where you must start from with them. I think there's also been a class element. There's also been, where Fine Gael were traditionally seen as bigger farmers, professional classes, particularly in Dublin, were more natural Fine Gael voters than they were. Fianna Fáil, particularly in its early stages, was, and Lamassoure described it as such, the working man's party. And I think a lot of the party's history, the two parties' history, was tied up with that. While it obviously had its roots in the Civil War, their identities were discernibly different. I think that's a lot less important now. But I was struck, you know, recently I spent a lot of time to gauge their attitude to the prospect of the so-called Grand Coalition recently. I spent a fair bit of time talking to grassroots members of Fianna Fáil. And while they exhibited a range of attitudes towards that and towards their history, almost all of them were opposed to the idea of a Grand Coalition now, some of them vehemently. But when you spoke to them about the reasons why, they gave different sort of reasons why. When you spoke to them about their own image of their party, they were convinced that they are different to Fine Gael. And actually, many of them find it offensive that nobody understands why they are different. And on that kind of class or ideologically based difference, it struck me about them that many of the things that they were proudest of, as they would see it, as the achievements of Fianna Fáil in government, were things like the social welfare system, public housing, the old age pension, investments in education, that sort of thing, which would be classically regarded as, you know, the objectives of social democratic or centre-left type governments. So I think that there is that residue of the ideological difference between them, if not discernible so much in the policies they follow in government, but in the way that the parties see themselves. And that is important. That is, I know we're talking about history and not current affairs, but that remains an important current political dynamic, the way they see themselves, and that is tied in with their history.
OK, Niamh Harrigan in our Limerick studio. I don't want to be flip about it, but is it about when you have your dinner? Do you have your dinner in the middle of the day, or do you have your dinner in the evening with a glass of wine? I mean, are we talking about the big farmers and barristers party, i.e. Fine Gael, and the men of no or little property, Fianna Fáil?
Not that straightforward at all. And to be honest, in terms of trying to map Irish voting behaviours and patterns around class and social cleavages, Ireland has always been regarded as somewhat of an anomaly. And in some ways, it's become more anomalous in the last 20 or 30 years. I mean, John White famously said that in Ireland, we had politics without a social basis based on this civil war divide. And then Mick Laver in the 1980s kind of qualified that a little bit. He talked about the strength of middle class identity in terms of Fine Gael in particular. But of course, one of the things that we've seen in the last 20 and 30 years is a certain retreat, particularly from Fianna Fáil, on kind of more marginalised communities and Sinn Féin kind of harvesting that. And again, that has changed the social basis of voting behaviours. But I suppose, Miles, from my point of view, I think it's more interesting if we turn the question on its head. So a lot of political scientists ask, well, how does your class position impact on how you vote? But I suppose, or your material circumstances in life. And I think it's more interesting to ask, how does how you vote impact on your material circumstances? And I'll explain what I mean by that, in the sense that what we've seen, if we look at how Irish historians have actually characterised the Civil War divide, one of the things that consequences that falls from that in the 40s, 30s and the 50s is that benefits in kind distributed through pull are distributed along Civil War lines, so to speak. So if you follow a particular Civil War party and you vote for that party and you have a long-standing family relationship with that particular candidate, you can go to that person and ask for things. And in that sense, I think that's why Civil War identities are so strong, because they have been re-experienced through patronage and clientelism and networks of pull by every generation. It's not just a question of where your great-grandfather fought, it's how each generation experienced that.
I mean, I suppose it's interesting because the pensions, this issue of the military pensions, and if you were a member of the Irish Republican Army in the Civil War, you were not entitled to a military pension until Fianna Fáil comes in 1932. Am I correct there?
Yeah, and there's lots of speculation as well about the operation. I mean, for instance, if you look at somebody like Joe Lee, makes quite a big discussion of introductions of things like the Civil Service Commission and land commissions, etc. But actually, there's a lot of speculation and indeed some work done on, you know, what were the roles of patronage and Civil War loyalties in shaping how some of those benefits were distributed. And certainly all the studies of clientelism would suggest that your voting patterns had a material impact on the kind of pull you could access and the benefits you could get from that. So I do think that's why it's continued to be live in so many generations.
Niamh Purcell, Owen O'Malley in the Sunday Independent today, Owen O'Malley of DCU, I think an interesting point that he made, that there's a gap between these two parties, but the gap is not wide, but it's deep. Now, that's something that I think if you're an Irish person of a certain age, it seems counterintuitive, but you can actually understand it.
Oh, absolutely. No, there's a huge gap between the two parties in terms of the supporters and activists within the parties and how they see themselves.
Even though if you had to take their policies, you know, one in your right hand, one in your left hand, there's not amount of difference between them.
That might be the case now, but it certainly wasn't in the 1930s particularly just to sort of track back a bit, when we talk about Civil War politics, it's a shorthand for parties that emerged following on from the Civil War. But obviously neither of the two parties that we're talking about existed during the Civil War or even immediately afterwards. So what we're talking about is Fianna Fáil, which was established in 1926 by De Valera in part as an effort to get away from the Civil War,
I mean, they were still both Sinn Féin in the Civil War.
Because they were still both Sinn Féin. After the Civil War, you've got Cumann na n-Éill and the Free State Government on one side, and you've got Sinn Féin on the other. I mean, when you hear people from Sinn Féin calling for the end of Civil War politics in Ireland, it's kind of ironic because they're, you know, the last residual sort of aspect of it in many ways.
But talk to me a little bit about one of the reasons for the animosity, and that is the executions, because the pro-treaty Sinn Féin government, which then becomes Cumann na Gael in the 1920s, executed a lot more people in 1922-23 than the British government did in 1916.
Yeah, very much so. The sort of iconic figure is 77, which was frequently sort of flung at the Free State side by Republicans. Now, obviously, the figure of 77 is not actually the correct figure for the number of people who were, that's the number of people who were legally executed. There's also the four people who were killed in Mountjoy on in December of 1922. And there's also maybe 100 and 150 extrajudicial killings. So things like atrocities like Ballyseedy, where Republican prisoners were tied to a landmine in Ballyseedy Wood and blown up.
And only one survived.
Which
is why we know the story.
He subsequently became a Fianna Fáil TD in the 1930s. But he was, I think, when we talk about the Civil War and the kind of bitterness that is kind of identified with the Civil War, Stephen Fuller, who was the person who survived in Ballyseedy, was an example of someone who didn't want to be bitter and never spoke about what happened and was very keen to move beyond the kind of conflict that had existed then. And I think, I mean, I did a bit of a search to see how often 77 got. People always say that 77 was bandied about in the Dáil between the different sides, and you know, whenever anyone was having a row, they'd just shout it out. Or you know, it doesn't actually appear in the Dáil records as much as you might expect. And in actual fact, one of the first ones I found was Desmond Fitzgerald during the 1930s, who's complaining that people keep shouting it at him sort of on the street and that kind of thing. But I suppose the...
Let's just actually hear a confrontation that takes place, because during the Civil War, the Free State, as I say, sanctioned more than five times the number of executions. And this led to huge animosity between the two sides, which is illustrated in this exchange in the Dáil in 1927.
I do not want to start on a bitter note, though God knows I could, and God knows I would have justification in thinking of those who lie in cold graves. 77 of my comrades who lie in cold graves today, and the fathers and mothers and the sons and daughters of these people expect us and look to us to vindicate them in some way.
A measure of the rawness and depth of feeling held by Fianna Fáil TD Sean T. O'Kelly. Pro-treaty TD Ernest Blythe retorted...
There was a sort of suggestion in Deputy O'Kelly's speech that on their side was virtue and Éireann, and on ours Saxon and guilt. That is all very well for an election platform, but it does not bear any relation to reality. I do not want to see recrimination. I suppose I could take my part in the battle of recrimination just as well as anyone else, but what good will that do the country?
And those quotes are taken from Diarmaid Ferriter's Irish Times column on Saturday. Now, obviously it was incredibly difficult for the pro and anti-treaty sides to even tolerate each other after the atrocities that were committed on both sides during the Civil War. And that they would have been very raw. So we're talking there about 5 years afterwards. But how much of this comes down to the position and the status of a man who never even fired a shot in the Civil War, Pat, Éamon de Valera?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, De Valera creates Fianna Fáil, not necessarily in his own image, but in his own kind of idealized image of what, you know, his comrades had been fighting for. And that spirit infuses, you know, almost half a century almost of the party. I mean, it's not, we use Civil War politics as kind of a glib shorthand these days for something that is kind of completely outdated. And of course, the divisions of the 1920s have little relevance to the politics of today. But the fact that they should be so that the animosities and the emotions on either side should define politics for a long period of time afterwards, in a way, isn't surprising. surprising because the cleavage in society and in politics is so great. And, you know, right up until, you know, the 1960s or the 1970s, that's only 40 years, the 1960s, after the events of the Civil War, which sounds like a long period of time. But you think of, well, Enda Kenny is 40 years in the Dáil. So, you know, in a way, I think to dismiss the divisions between the parties as civil war politics kind of misunderstands or fails fully to understand how important those things were, those divisions were right through society for a long period of time.
OK, some of the comments that have been coming in, the reason why Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are nervous is precisely because they are so alike, says Alan in Sligo. They're fishing for votes from the same broadly centre-right pool. If one gets the upper hand, it could be the end for the other. Kenny has rudely ignored Fianna Fáil up to this point and now expects them to jump to his command. Another election is now called for, and we are all a little wiser. Ray in Kilkenny says the 50th anniversary of the 1916 Rising was commemorated exactly 50 years ago today on Sunday the 10th of April 1966. Fianna Fáil were in government at the time. Sean Lamass was Taoiseach. Niamh Harrigan, the position of Sean Lamass as Taoiseach. Okay, Sean Lamass is somebody you might have expected to harbour a huge grudge because of the murder of his brother during the Civil War. But when he dies in the mid to late 60s, 1967 I think it was, should that not have been the end of it? Because we've now handed over to the quote-unquote modernisers. We've handed over to Jack Lynch, Charlie Haughey, Garrett Fitzgerald.
Not at all. And in some ways, I think a very interesting moment in terms of the modern history of Fianna Fáil is actually the arms trial and is Charles Haughey's relationship to the whole Civil War tradition and the way in which De Valera built the kind of aspiration to create a 32-county republic into the vision of Fianna Fáil and the image of Fianna Fáil that he built. And in that sense, Miles, I feel in the kind of current debate that's been had about the Civil War divide, enough attention really hasn't been devoted to the peace process, because of course one of the big achievements of Fianna Fáil in government in the last 20 years, particularly during the 1990s, was its role in the peace process. But in its leadership role there, it essentially kind of ceded the aspiration to create the 32-county republic, which had been the key boundary between itself and Fine Gael in terms of the pro and anti-treaty side. And because Fianna Fáil were so successful at the time, there wasn't that much navel-gazing about what would be the long-term impact on Fianna Fáil in terms of its distinctiveness. But now, and I think after the trauma of the bailout and the big loss of the 2011 election, you know, the whole question of the viability of Fianna Fáil came for the first time to be discussed. And in that sense, I think what was given away essentially or ceded as part of the peace process becomes a bigger issue. And in that sense, I'm not at all surprised in terms of what Pat was saying there about the strength of grassroots Fianna Fáil feeling on this issue, because it is that 32 county aspiration was historically the kind of foundation stone of their distinctiveness, and it really exists no longer in that fashion. And as Niamh said earlier on, you know, that territory has been cornered by Sinn Féin. So there's an identity issue here for Fianna Fáil, which I think is at the heart of the passion which surrounds this Civil War divide issue for them.
In a way, just on that point about identity, I mean, Niamh is absolutely right. And, you know, it was always thought, I think, that, you know, only Fianna Fáil could have done that Good Friday deal. Only Fianna Fáil could have done that, got rid of Articles 2 and 3, partly because as was evidenced by, you know, the Anglo-Irish Agreement, Fianna Fáil would have opposed it had it been Fine Gael doing it on the other side in government, as it were. But that identity, and it's actually, I know we're talking about history, but it's actually an issue, I think, for Fianna Fáil now. What replaces that? And Micheál Martin being very successful in the last election, that repositioning, certainly rhetorically, we'll wait and see what comes out of it policy-wise, but rhetorically repositioning Fianna Fáil as a centre-left party is one of the things that has energised his own grassroots and helped deliver the general election result for him, but has re-energised his own organisation by playing to the party's historical sense of itself.
And of course, Micheál Martin is an historian and has a very, very, very good sense of history as well.
No, I think what Pat's saying about the peace process just reminded me there of The situation that existed around the time of the peace process, where Fine Gael was led by John Bruton. And John Bruton is from a Redmondite tradition. So he doesn't actually, he's not part of the Civil War politics. And that's why it's kind of a bit simplistic.
And is that one of the other problems? Because the way I think most historians would see it is that the Redmondites and even Southern Unionists end up in Cumann na Gael and Fine Gael. I mean, we have a text in up here in East Donegal, and in Ashon, Fine Gael are always seen as the Unionist Party of the Republic. The huge Protestant community up here, most of them were Ulster Scots Presbyterians, have always voted for Fine Gael since the 1930s. That's Sean in St Johnstone and East Donegal.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely correct. And so when we talk about, when we use this shorthand of civil war politics, we're actually not talking about civil war politics at all, because we're talking about a party in Fine Gael's case, for instance, that was founded in 1934, which is an alliance of unionists, Redmondites, fascists, and anti-treaty Sinn Féin. So it's a group of that is about more than the Civil War. And just also about Charlie Haughey, it's interesting that in the 1960s, Charles Haughey's father was a Free State Army, was in the Free State Army. And a lot of the kind of hostility that he had within his own party with people like George Colley and that kind of thing was because his pedigree, if you to use Garrett Fitzgerald's term, was not sound. So there's an element of complexity there that sort of shouldn't be overlooked there either.
There's a text which has just come in, and somebody asks a question which is actually an interesting question in the context of what we're talking about, and I'll put it to you, Pat. Could John Bruton have been a member of Fianna Fáil? Politically, in terms of his politics, you would say, you know, the policies he espoused would not have been a million miles from the policies of Fianna Fáil. But it beggars belief, the notion that John Bruton could have been a member of Fianna Fáil.
But this is an important point in understanding not just contemporary Irish politics, but historic Irish politics, is that the role of policy is, while it's important, is not the defining one. I mean, PJ Mara once said, you know, that the Irish people, that the Irish voters didn't give a hoot about policy. He used a slightly different term. But, you know, actually, if you look from outside, one of the things that strikes you about Ireland, looking at it in the last 30 or 40 years, is while the government's change basically policy, the policies pursued by the governments don't. And, you know, to say, and that's why to say, you know, there is no policy differences or very little policy differences between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, therefore they must go into government, is maybe true, but it misunderstands, I think, or fails fully to understand properly what it is that separates the two parties.
Niamh Horrigan, I mentioned Owen O'Malley in an article in the Sunday Independent today, and he also writes about, and when I started reading it, I thought, ah, come on out of that. But it actually becomes more compelling as he goes on, because he talks about Fianna Fáil as being the descendants of the old Irish, and Fine Gael as being the descendants of the Normans, the Anglo-Normans and the New English. Is there anything in that? Is it all to do with a sort of a tribalism?
Well, in a sense, that was a study that he did in partnership with a geneticist, and they looked at things like surnames.
It's genetic.
Exactly.
We're back to the gene pool.
But certainly, actually, if we look at the research, for instance, if you look at Michael Marsh's more recent research and McLaver's stuff on why Irish people vote the way they do, and why in particular people vote for civil war parties, there is an absolutely distinctive pattern, particularly pre-2011, of people who vote for civil war parties being very much influenced by their parents' vote. And that's a quite distinctive pattern when compared to other European countries. There's also, and I think it harks back to the point that Niamh is making about the Redmondite tradition, I think there is scope to certainly look for deeper roots pre-1916. You know, one of the other distinctive things, for instance, that comes out in profiling who joined Fianna Fáil, for instance, in the early days, was their exposure or their involvement in cultural nationalist activities, things like the Irish language movement, etc. And again, one would have to argue, you know, what type of people chose to engage in those activities in the first place. You know, there's an element of self-selection. So I think there is scope to say that some of these divisions are very deep. They may predate the 20th century. And certainly we continue to see that in the emphasis on family, on personalism, and on loyalty. And one of the striking things about, you know, the Fianna Fáil revival is not only, as Pat said there, the reinvigoration of the kind of centre-left tradition within Fianna Fáil, but also the reactivation of the family dynasty tradition. And we saw many young candidates this time around come from Fianna Fáil families and do well.
And JJ texts in to say the Civil War divide was not on the issue of partition. Amen to that. It actually wasn't. It was about the Crown and the position of the Crown. And I think Michael Laffin has done a survey and discovered that in the treaty debates, which went on for a number of days, about 3%, I think it was, of the treaty debates were devoted to discussion of partition. So it had nothing to, that had nothing to do with it.
No.
Okay, and okay. Finally, I suppose I need to ask you, Pat, to take off the history hat that you have worn lightly.
You were wearing somewhat unconvincingly
for the last 15 or 20 minutes or so, and you would predict that there would be a little arrangement as opposed to a coalition, I'd say, over the next week to 10 days.
Over the next couple of weeks, I think, you know, to probably 2-3 maybe at the outset. There will either be, a minority Fine Gael coalition made up of Fine Gael and independents facilitated by Fianna Fáil. There won't be a grand coalition between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. So there will either be a minority government or there will be another election. After that second election, whether it comes in May or in June or in 6 months' time or in 3 years or in 5 years, I think you are much closer then to the possibility of a grand coalition, but not this time.
Well, that will be definitely historic, so you can put the history hat back on again. A couple more texts, some very interesting ones coming in here. Fianna Fáil, are they not a Peronist party? Rhetorically left, but into big business when it comes to it. That's from Niall in Ennis. And one that I found absolutely fascinating from Donna. Fianna Fáil were the men who stood by Parnell. There isn't a grain of truth in that, except that one of the people who stood by Parnell was John Redmond.
John Redmond is the fly in the ointment on that, but I think if you look at Tom Garvin's evolution of nationalist politics, it has some really good stuff on the kind of prehistory of the movement, which is not genetically based, but sort of is a bit more political, and it's well worth a look at.
You should do an entire programme on the Fianna Fáil gene.
Absolutely. Definitely, I think, and we'll have you back for that particular programme when we get around to doing it. I think we'll let the dust settle just for the moment. We might do it in the next series, September onwards. Pat Leahy and Niamh Purcell and Niamh Harrigan, thank you all very, very much indeed.